HHS Chief Alex Azar lands in Taiwan, and Beijing responds with a threat of force. The Trump administration faces a pivotal vote in the UN Security Council on Iran this week. Did Hezbollah want Beirut's ammonium nitrate for a war with Israel? And the biggest news in the world, of course, is that World News Brief is now going daily. Welcome to World News Brief by CGM Radio. And welcome to this Monday, August 10th, 2020 edition of World News Brief by CGM Radio. I am your host, Winston R. Holland. Delighted to be with you as always. Now on a Monday, perhaps for the first time. I don't think I've ever done a Monday show, but here I am. It's a Monday. I'm doing a show if you have been following World News Brief. And before that, when it was called Mideast News Brief, you are well aware of the fact that I did the show for the most part on Fridays. It was a weekly wrap-up of the most important news, first out of the Middle East, and then we expanded it to the world. And I've been wanting to do a daily show for a long time, but trying to fit that into my schedule is never easy. Now I'm able to do so, and so here we are. So what can you expect? Well, you can expect 20 to 30 minutes a day, like I said, Monday through Thursday, of the most important, impactful, relevant world news, essentially, along peppered with, of course, some insight and analysis and commentary. I definitely want to be bringing on more experts in these various fields because I most certainly am not. I am a news guy. I am not an expert in all these fields, and it's very difficult to be an expert in more than even one of these fields. So we, of course, need some help along the way. So my goal and my commitment to you is to bring you real news along with how to, really what's my heart, because information is one thing, information is great, but I'm also interested in, okay, here's the news, here are the facts, what are the solutions? What's the best way that, you know, for example, I mean, we're going to be talking about China a lot, especially now that I'm doing a daily show and I can give kind of smaller updates as opposed to having, you know, do one update once a week. But how does the U.S. handle China economically from a data, from a security, from an online internet perspective and everything that's going on from trade to economic warfare to TikTok or whatever? So I want the news and I want to deliver the news, but I also want to hopefully, where possible and where applicable, deliver solutions as well. So that's the heart. Again, expect a 20 to 30 minute update every day that you should have typically by 11:30 Eastern time. If it's a normal day, of course, you know, it could always vary depending on my schedule, but that's the idea. So those on the East Coast, you've got it by your lunch break. And of course, what would you rather do on your lunch break than to listen to World News Brief by CGM Radio? And of course, the way to make sure you get the latest episodes, the absolute moment that they are delivered, is to subscribe to the show. You can do that a few ways. Open your podcasting app, type in World News Brief CGM, World News Brief, Cross Global Media. You can do that. You can go to cgmradio.com/world, and links to subscribe are right there. You can even get this show delivered to your email inbox if you're still into that kind of thing. It's amazing after all these years how email marketing seems to be just as big as ever. It's pretty amazing. Everybody is still doing email, which was kind of the first big thing with the internet revolution in the 90s. So you can even have it delivered to your inbox. Also, you can get updates online, Parler and Twitter, at World News CGM. And make sure to visit cgmradio.com to check out all of our great shows, including The Bob Siegel Show, JP's Political Matrix, and more that are coming down the line. Make sure to check those out, cgmradio.com. Also, email me, get in touch with me. I'm very much interested in everything from news tips to insults to prayer requests. Whatever you'd like to send me, email me, world@cgmradio.com, world@cgmradio.com. All right, let's jump into some news here. I am, today's a big day in U.S.-Taiwan relations, and the reason being, of course, is that HHS Chief Alex Azar landed in Taiwan yesterday, and of course, China was not ultra-thrilled by the idea. This is from the Washington Times, Lauren Meyer. Secretary of Health and Human Services Alex Azar arrived in Taiwan on Sunday, marking the highest level visit to the island by a U.S. official since 1979. Wow, that's pretty big. And why is this such a big deal? Because the U.S. has had, I believe since the 70s, the One China policy. What's the One China policy? The One China policy says that these rabble-rousers, these terrible people that do not submit to the executive, that do not submit to the Politburo, these terrible people that actually want things such as, human rights, freedom, self-determination, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, these ridiculous things that the plebeians and the underclasses, the teeming masses do not deserve to have, right? Because only the autocrats, only the Politburo, the executive committee, the Communist Party, ruling party deserves those things. Everybody's equal, but some people are more equal than others, which, of course, makes perfect sense. This is 2020. 1984 should have been written 2020. Should have been titled 2020, given what's been going on here in the United States. But the One China policy says those rabble-rousers in that island of Taiwan or that city of Hong Kong that actually want things like human rights and freedom, they're not legitimate. Taiwan is part of China. Hong Kong is part of China. It's all China. It's a One China policy. It's One China, regardless of what Taiwan wants, regardless of what Hong Kong may want. So that is still our official policy. That's still official U.S. policy. Now, President Trump, if you recall, back in 2017, did call the president of Taiwan and congratulate her on her win, which of course sent the China loving media just screaming with like chickens with their heads cut off. How dare the president break the long standing tradition of the One China policy? You see, it only matters breaking tradition only matters, of course, when it goes against the left's agenda. If it goes with the left's agenda, then honoring, time-honored tradition, of course, it makes perfect sense. And, of course, we see that with Antifa and the terrorist Antifa and BLM movements that are essentially attempting to destroy and remake our nation. Those traditions don't matter. Even guys like Abe Lincoln don't matter. I digress. Mr. Azar landed in Taipei and was greeted by William Brent Christensen, the director of the American Institute in Taiwan, and by Taiwan's Deputy Foreign Minister Tian Qingquang. The trip, which has been repeatedly bashed by China, signifies the willingness of the Trump administration to escalate the pressure campaign against Beijing, even with U.S. elections looming in November. That is pretty interesting, is that typically in a time like this, you would see administrations take it safe and the Trump administration, with this visit by Secretary Azar, is basically saying we're continuing. We're continuing the soft power diplomatic fight against China. Well, Washington and Beijing have clashed on a number of fronts, including trade, human rights, Hong Kong, and control of the South China Sea. China has always reacted with a special intensity to signs that the U.S. is bolstering the independence of Taiwan, which China considers an integral part of its territory. U.S. officials have maintained that Mr. Azar's primary mission will be to discuss Taiwan's success in handling the COVID-19 pandemic. And he tweeted out, quote, "Honored to be here to convey our support for Taiwan and their global health leadership." On Monday, The secretary is expected to sign a health cooperation memorandum of understanding with Taiwan and visit the island's Center for Disease Control. He's also scheduled to meet with President Tsai Ing-wen during his stay. Taiwan has been globally praised for its handling of the pandemic. With a population of 23.7 million, Taiwan has reported 480 cases of COVID and 7 deaths. All right, so we'll keep monitoring that. Now, Beijing decided to, in the midst of that, while he was there, show a little bit of force. And this was actually quickly from the New York Times reported that both countries have in recent months stepped up their military presence in the region, fueling worries about the growing risk of a confrontation, whether intended or not. On Monday, two Chinese fighter jets briefly crossed the median line in the strait separating mainland China and Taiwan. The jets were driven out by patrolling Taiwanese aircraft, Taiwan's Air Force Command said in a statement released by the Defense Ministry. Do not take that as an accident. That was not an accident. China meant to do that. China meant to show we're not happy. And by the way, we're using fighter jets. We're using a display of our military to show we're not happy. And to give a warning to Taiwan, to give a warning to the U.S. that war is not off the table. Hard power is not off the table. So we will see what happens, and we, of course, will continue to monitor that. As I mentioned on last week's show, in the UN Security Council this week, the Trump administration is going to be basically attempting to extend an arms embargo on Iran. This, of course, is being met with resistance and threats of veto from Iran's biggest friends, apparently, Russia and China. This is from The Hill. The Trump administration's Iran strategy will face a key test this week as the United States calls for a vote at the United Nations on its resolution to extend an arms embargo against the Islamic Republic. If the resolution fails, which experts say is the most likely scenario, the Trump administration has threatened to invoke snapback sanctions, which supporters of the Iran nuclear deal fear will be the agreement's death knell. So apparently, what can happen? So let's say that the representatives, the U.S. representatives at the UN, they bring up this arms embargo resolution before the Security Council. Russia, China veto it. The U.S. has one last tool in its toolkit, and they can actually invoke a snapback. Because they're part of the nuclear deal, or were to some extent, they are and are not, but at least because they're part of the Security Council and were a part of the deal, they can invoke snapback sanctions, which essentially means that they could would have the power to put all the sanctions back on Iran. Now, of course, the experts go back and forth about whether, because ultimately, China and Russia can ignore that. And I will have all of these stories actually. So typically, when I do a show, what I like to do is I meant to mention this in the intro. What I like to do is to give you guys links to all of the stories that I use for the show, so you can go and you can do your own research. And a lot of times, I don't have time on this show to read the whole article, nor do I necessarily want to. But I want you to at least have the link so you can dig deeper. You can check it out for yourself. You can look at look at the primary reporting on it. And typically what I would do is I would include those in the show notes of the podcast. Well, we're changing up things a bit at cgmradio.com. And any news stories that are mentioned on this broadcast, as well as some extras we're going to throw in, will be on the homepage at cgmradio.com in a news aggregator style. So if you want to know what the show is about before listening to the show, you can go there. So any links from my show and other shows that are talked about here on the network will be on the homepage at cgmradio.com. And if you miss it, if an article that me or another show host has mentioned is not on the homepage, fear not. We do have archives as well that you will be able to look through. I'm going to be getting a search bar up there and all of that, so you could even, you know, type in them. I don't have it yet as of this broadcast, but I'm about to introduce a search functionality onto cgmradio.com. For those that do not know, I run CGM Radio. I'm not just the host of World News Brief. I founded it and running this thing. So we're trying to really get CGM Radio up and going, and I of course am in charge of that. So all that to say, they will not be in the show notes of the podcast, but a link to the CGM Radio homepage will be, and you'll be able to find all of the articles there. And one thing I wanted to mention at the end of this article, because most of the article, this is The Hill, most of the article is about how it's terrible and it's crazy, it's confusion, and the world's going to end. You know how it always is. At the very end of the article, they give a positive perspective that I wanted to bring up, and I encourage you to read the whole article and look at all of, you know, all the different reasonings of why it could not work and could throw things into confusion, which they could be right. I mean, it is, you know, it's when you push back, if you just let someone beat you up, right? Things are pretty normal, right? The normality is you keep getting beat up, but if you start fighting back, things get crazier. So just because things get crazier or things get more difficult or tense isn't necessarily a bad thing. But that's what they like to focus. That's what they like to focus on. But it says at the end of the article here, still, the Center for New American Securities, Goldenberg, argued the 2015 Security Council resolution is a, quote, key piece of the architecture that keeps what's left of the JCPOA alive. So if the U.S. is essentially able to overturn the Security Council resolution that allowed and was in favor of the JCPOA, if the Trump administration comes in and calls these snapback sanctions in and basically takes out that security resolution, which is essentially what could happen, well, we could ultimately get the results, which is, he says here, quote, if you break it, you might just collapse the entire deal. Nobody really knows what will happen. The administration's position is that lifting the arms embargo is absolutely unacceptable. But their real position is, we want to break the JCPOA, and we think we can use this to do it. I think so. The Trump administration, admittedly by those who are not in favor, who are not in favor of breaking the JCPOA, the Trump administration is very much in favor of doing so. They will do what they have to do. So last week on Friday, we went into great depth about what happened with the explosion, the really unprecedented explosion in Beirut, where you had, last that I saw over 130 people dead, 5,000, I believe about 5,000 injured. And the question is, the idea is, what is this stuff? Well, we know why it was there. It was there because this tanker had been there since 2013, and it had just been sitting there, and it had just been left in the bureaucracy and the mess that is Lebanon, sadly, had kept it there. And so all of this ammonium nitrate was stored there, an unbelievable amount that resulted in the explosion that we saw. This is from Times of Israel. Hezbollah apparently wanted Beirut's ammonium nitrate for Israel war. Hezbollah apparently planned to use the ammonium nitrate stockpile that caused a massive blast at Beirut's port this week against Israel in a, quote, third Lebanon war, according to an unsourced assessment publicized on Israel's Channel 13 Friday night. The report was broadcast hours after Hezbollah's leader, Hassan Nasrallah, gave a speech, quote, categorically denying that the group had stored any weapons or explosives at Beirut's port. Right. Following the massive explosion there Tuesday that has claimed over 157 lives and wounded thousands, quote, I would like to absolutely, categorically rule out anything belonging to us at the port. No weapons, no missiles, or bombs, or rifles, or even a bullet or ammonium nitrate, Nasrallah said. No cash, no nothing, not now, not ever. Pretty emphatic. I still don't believe him. I mean, he could be telling the truth, but I have no reason to trust what he says. Israel has not formally alleged that Hezbollah was connected to the Tuesday blast. Ammonium nitrate is used in the manufacture of explosives and is also an ingredient in making fertilizer. It has been blamed for massive industrial accidents in the past and was also a main ingredient in a bomb that destroyed a federal building in Oklahoma City in 1995. Last year, reports in Israel claimed that the Mossad had tipped off European intelligence agencies about Hezbollah storing caches of ammonium nitrate for use in bombs in London, Cyprus, and elsewhere. So Hezbollah had already last year tipped off the Europeans that Hezbollah was storing this stuff, this ammonium nitrate stuff. So that would give us a reason to give us pause to the idea that Nasrallah is actually telling the truth, even if he tells the truth emphatically. If you tell a lie long enough, people will believe it. And if you tell a lie long enough and emphatically enough, they'll believe it even more. The Channel 13 report noted that, quote, the material that exploded in the port is not new to Nasrallah and Hezbollah. It detailed Hezbollah's previous connections to ammonium nitrate, including incidents in Germany and the UK. There's a history here, folks. There's a history. Both widely reported at the time, in which its agents were reportedly found with substantial quantities of the material. In London in 2015, following a Mossad tip-off, British intelligence found four Hezbollah operatives with 3 tons of ammonium nitrate held in flour sacks, the TV report said, citing foreign reports. A similar process led to the discovery in Germany of Hezbollah operatives with enough ammonium nitrate, quote, to blow up a city. I'm going to read that sentence again. A similar process led to the discovery in Germany of Hezbollah operatives with enough ammonium nitrate. Yes, that's the stuff that blew up in Beirut last week. Enough ammonium nitrate to, quote, blow up a city, the report said. Germany subsequently banned Hezbollah as a terrorist organization. Quote, that's what Nasrallah intended to do in Europe, the TV report said. Regarding what was stored in Beirut port, the assessment is Nasrallah intended to use it in the Third Lebanon War. Israel has fought 2 wars with Lebanon, 1982, and then there was a cross-border raid by Hezbollah in which Israeli soldiers were killed and abducted in 2006. So conflicts between Israel and Lebanon were not new, and Hezbollah in Lebanon has wanted to take Israel out for decades. Meanwhile, former Israeli Army Chief and ex-defense minister Moshe Yaalon told a Saudi news site that a blast in a large Hezbollah weapons depot at the port preceded the explosion of ammonium nitrate. Yaalon of the Tesh Atid Talem party was quoted by the Arabic website as saying Hezbollah had been aware of the material's presence there and had control over the port. So we'll see as more and more evidence comes out that, as you can see, as what this article just detailed, there's a long history of Hezbollah and ammonium nitrate. The very stuff, I believe it was 2,700 metric tons that blew up in Beirut. So we will definitely be keeping an eye on that. But the explosion in Beirut doesn't just hit home with the Lebanese, although they are the ones, of course, that experienced it, I mean, the most drastically. They're the ones that physically experienced it. But those in the surrounding areas also took great pause especially in Iraq, took great pause when they saw what happened as well. And so I want to discuss that now in our Monday segment, Mission Monday. So we're going to have a different segment each week. On Monday, we are going to have Mission Monday, where I talk about something of interest. It could be, as we've done before on this broadcast, a particular prisoner for the faith, prisoner for the gospel, or just something having to do with the missions movement as a whole. So, and this week, since I saw this at persecution.org, which is a ministry of Voice of the Martyrs, and this specifically had to do with how the Iraqis reacted to what they saw in Beirut. This is persecution.org, August 10th, today. Last week's catastrophe in Lebanon's capital city of Beirut is one of the most forceful and damaging non-nuclear explosions in world history. One of the most forceful and damaging non-nuclear explosions in world history. Perhaps that event was more significant than we realized. Over 2,700 tons of poorly stored ammonium nitrate ignited in an explosion that was reportedly felt in both Cyprus and Damascus. So the reverberations of it went really far outside of Lebanon, even into Syria. Most corners of Beirut have significant damage, and it is estimated that tens of thousands are now homeless. The entire global community was shocked by this disaster, but nearby in Iraq, where militias run rampant and the storage of explosives in residential areas is common, the shock was underscored by the thought, this could have happened here. It is reality that helped propel Christian immigration from the country. And again, as we've talked about previously, the Christian population in the Middle East has been decimated, I think, by about 90% since the Iraq War and then subsequent wars and ISIS. I mean, the Christian population has just been ravaged, and it's not just Christians but other minority groups that it's become a very, very, very dangerous place. I mean, it kind of always has been, but it has been, the 21st century has been particularly brutal for Christians and other religious minorities in the Middle East. It just has been. And then you have places like Turkey, which I want to talk about Turkey a good amount on this show as well, where you have a Western-friendly, liberal, majority Muslim state that in just a very, very, very few short years that I watched unfold before my very eyes as I followed it, turning into a theocratic Islamic state, which is really, really sad. So all that to say is just the Middle East has changed. The 21st century changed the Middle East. And we got to be very, very careful about what wars, which I admittedly, sadly, such as the Iraq War, what wars we promote and get behind just because there's a R or a D behind the name. One Christian living in Baghdad watched in disbelief at the events unfolding in Lebanon. Quote, I would imagine that this explosion happens in Iraq rather than in Beirut. I think Iranians have more influence in Iraq. We are geographically closer to Iran. In Iraq, there are many more military bases that belong to Iran. The Iraqi government should start looking for such materials like ammonium nitrate to avoid any similar disaster. His point is clear. If this stuff is in Beirut and Lebanon is essentially controlled by Iran, or much of the politics of Lebanon is controlled by Iran because of the Iranians' influence and funding of Hezbollah, well, if Iran is doing the same thing in Iraq to proxy militia, not just a proxy militia groups, but is essentially controlling. They have a Iran-friendly government that's essentially, essentially become a puppet of Iran. This could happen anywhere. That ammonium nitrate, I mean, who knew that this could have possibly happened in Beirut? And who's to say that this a similar type of explosion could not happen in Iraq as well? Quote, Iraq and Lebanon have similarities on so many things, adds another Baghdad Christian, mainly the influence of Iran, which results in a militia existence in both countries. Those militias could be different in approaches, but there is one thing that they 100% share, corruption. Since they are recognized as terrorist groups and they can't get resources unless it's under the table. Quote, corruption results in risking thousands of lives every day. Stocking explosive materials in Iraq among civilians' houses is risking lives. Bad storage at the border is risking lives. I think we can have examples as much as you can read, he continues. These militias, one way or another, are destroying the Middle East. Wherever there is Iran or its militia, there are disasters, crimes, and abuse of human rights. That results in the leaving of Christians and other people who can't be a member of a militia for religious or social reasons. A Christian from Karakosh explained, I have experienced so many wars. Since 1980 and 1991 and later, the safe place during the war was home. But not anymore. You could die even if you were at your home. Just if any militia decided to store their weapons and rockets in your neighborhood. Such a reality sits uneasily in the minds of Christians. Quote, is there still a place to live in this country? Asked one woman. When you lose someone close to your heart, that is the worst thing that could happen to someone, especially if the cause of death was avoidable. Militias are avoidable. After every explosion and targeting, I see people leaving the country. We ended up strangers. Friends and relatives are leaving, one after one. Can you tell me when that will have an end? I wish we could. I wish we could. I wish we could say when that will have an end. But sadly, for the foreseeable future, it does not look like it will. So that's why we need to pray. Pray for Lebanon. Pray for Iraq, pray for the Middle East, and of course, that God's kingdom would come to the world. And that is our mission, our very first Mission Monday segment. And thank you guys so much for joining us for this very first daily edition of World News Brief by CGM Radio. If you like the podcast, please consider giving us a 5-star rating on whatever app you listen in on, and make sure to subscribe as well. Also, email me. world@cgmradio.com, and you can give me a follow on Twitter and on Parler @WorldNewsCGM. And remember, you can find all the links discussed in this show at the homepage on cgmradio.com, and there will be a link to that in the show notes of this podcast. Have a great rest of your Monday. Have a great week, and may His kingdom come, and His will be done on earth as it is in heaven.